knowing and yet not always being able to say it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that, my catechumens have been finding that really helpful as we talk and work that through, that realizing there's a word for something that you know even when you can't say it. And sometimes people will embarrass you by wanting to argue with you, and you can't quite answer them. It's really okay, you know. They make fun of Orthodox, where I come from, because, you know, Baptists got Bibles. And they'll say, they don't know their Bible. I'm thinking, yes, they do. They just don't know they know it. But they hear the scripture constantly in every service. They're bathed in it. You know, they know it in their bones. They know it in their stomachs. You know? And they not only know God, they eat him. Yeah? But he's not in a book. He's in their belly. And this is good. This is good. Questions, though? No? I asked mine.
Can you repeat the questions that are being asked, assuming that you're going to get questions for the...
Yeah, okay.
Ask questions. They're afraid they're going to speak with the wrong grammar.
I know. Yeah, I know. This is very good, yeah. Yes, thank you.
Is this... are you working on the theme for another book?
Mm-hmm.
The
book I'm working on and have been working on for about 2 years is on modernity, but I'll tell you, for a long while I kept feeling like, and I've got a lot of stuff of it written, and it just kept feeling like critique, you know, and it's like one more book slamming the modern world. And after a while it just isn't very fun. The nice thing I like about the book Everywhere Present is that it actually has a very positive image, and it's just easier to read that than, because some people can do the other thing and just get depressed. And I, just this last year working with it, the idea of grammar and the grammar of theology has been with me a long time, maybe 20 years, but I started using it to talk about this, and I just recently decided that I think it will be a good way to kind of arrange as a kind of a way to arrange and talk about this. So there'll be a lot, because the nice thing about it is it's an image that'll run through a whole lot of things. And so, especially in the positive sense that we're talking about recovering our humanity. And I'm not trying to bash modernity. I'm trying to promote humanity and get people back to what it is to be a human being instead of a project, instead of a better man. Oh, God help us. God save me from better men. Any of you know the movie? There's a little Russian movie with English subtitles. You can only find it on YouTube as far as I know. But it's called Predel Angela. Yeah, I thought not. It's a real... now you go searching YouTube and make it crash tonight. But it's a really, really good book. I would compare it with Ostrov, the movie The Island. I would compare it like that in terms of its quality. It is, it means, Predel Angela means something like the Isle, A-I-S-L-E, the Isle of the Angels. And it's about a young man whose father had been a priest, but he's joined the Bolsheviks. And in this situation, he is ordered to shoot a priest, and he does, and is sent as a spy into Valam, the monastery. And it's an interesting story there, and it's really a story about his redemption and his salvation. And it's really marvelous. It's a story the way of redemption, only a Russian could tell it. You know, it's just really marvelous. And so, but in that, the language of the Bolsheviks, and it's very Russian in that, but the language of the Bolsheviks, he's talking about creating a better world. You know, it's that very primitive Bolshevik language that we're here to make a better world. And, you know, they think they are, but they're shooting priests left and right and monks and stuff. And it's, but Predel, P-R-I-D-E-L, Angela, A-N-G-E-L-A. And if you search it on YouTube, you can find a version with English subtitles, and it's a really good watch. You'll thank me and think that was worth the entire talk that I gave, that you sat through, with that one movie. So I recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it. But better men. That was a motto of the Bolsheviks, to create a better world. God help us. They invented the sexual revolution, too. The first country to make abortion legal was the Soviet Union in the 1920s. The first 10 years of the revolution, the radical rules of regarding family and sex were so extreme that Stalin himself had to put a stop to it. I mean, as only Stalin could. You know, here, do this or I'll kill you. And then I'll just kill you anyway. But, yeah, it was, in other words, this has not worked before. It will not work now. It will just take longer because we don't have a strong man to tell us to stop this. So it's going to, we're going to hurt ourselves a lot before we get over it.
Father?
Yeah.
I have a question. I'm going to try not to make it a leading question like other
priests
usually do, because they just want you to say something in particular. But, you know, for those who would wonder, how then do I become more fluent? How do I learn this grammar? I want to learn this grammar. I see how I just speak a foreign language and I don't understand the Orthodox grammar. I want to learn it. I'm maybe new to the church, maybe I'm a catechumen. I'm eager to learn it. I'm impatient to learn it. Yes, I hear that you say that it's going to take time. 20 years from now, I'll be able to say a few sentences. But in the meanwhile, what can I do to learn this grammar better?
Well, I think the first thing we do are the services of the church. Nothing speaks it more fluently than the services of the church. I've sometimes said to catechumens that the best catechumenate I could imagine would be to sing in the choir for 10 years. It's all there. The theology of the church is sung, and it's in those texts. And it is. I actually have a man who visits us who's a Lutheran who sings in our choirs on at Vespers, and sings and comes some other times. And he's been doing this for, it must be 7 or 8 years. If he ever decides that it's time, and he's got a brother who's Orthodox and stuff, but if he ever decides to pull the trigger, I mean, I'm just going to move him through very fast, because I just have very little to tell him. He's been singing it for so long, he knows it. It's in him, and we have conversations, and it's clear that he's getting it. The other side of it is look, don't be afraid that it takes time. I mean, frankly, here's a modern question. What can I do to fix this? Yeah, that's not just a modern question, that's the American question. You know, and when they give you an answer like you have to live it, we don't want that. No. Can I get a book? You know, is there a YouTube video on it? And I'll watch that one. You know, that's how I did the tile in my kitchen. You know, I did. I tiled my kitchen watching YouTube videos and doing it like that. How did a child learn to speak? By speaking, by listening, by getting occasionally corrected, or by hearing it enough that they kept saying it till they said it right, you know. First off, it's a good thing not to hold your opinion in very high regard. Opinion, in Greek, the word for opinion is not a good word. It's not a virtue. You know, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one, you know, but it does you no good. I had a fellow was visiting the church, and he said, "This is totally new. You're telling me that I shouldn't be reading my Bible to see what I think?" I said, "No, you read the Bible to see what somebody else thought." You know, you come to church to find out what you're going to think. When C.S. Lewis converted to Christianity, he didn't then say, "Gee, I wonder what I believe." His question was, "What do Christians believe?" Because he became a Christian. He became a Christian. He didn't just decide then, like an American, "And I'm going to invent my own denomination." Or my subset. When I was an Episcopalian, the dividing line between churches ran in and around every pew. Every man was his own church. It was like Burger King. Have it your own way. And they usually would lobby me as a priest to want to have it their own way. I had 3 masses every Sunday from groups that would even speak to each other. That's church. You know? And it's just crazy. I mean, this is not right. As Orthodox Christians, you find yourself falling out with others, something's wrong. That's not, you got your grammar wrong. You know, get back on board. Maybe you need to be wrong a little. Or maybe you just don't need to be quite as right. And be more patient with them or whatever, something like that. And, you know, but I think, you know, obviously we do our prayers and our confessions. Like we just do the life. You know, how do we do the life? You know, and I have some things I observe. I'm Scott Irish. I'm also an Anglo, actually. I've got a lot of English ancestry. And my Anglo converts who come in, which are mostly my converts, come into the church, and they want to know, why do we, and they're very uncomfortable about kissing icons and stuff. And they say, why do you kiss icons? And I say, well, because Orthodox Christianity begins in Jerusalem with Jews and Greeks. And they kiss everything. It's what they do. If Christianity had begun in the British Isles instead, we would still have icons, but we would come in, feel awkward, and apologize. Because this is what the English... Oh, quite so sorry. Yes. Oh, my goodness, you're aboard. No. So we do. I watch when the Greeks come into the church, and they're very fluid. It's like John Chrysostom says, they're swatting flies and they're crossing themselves like this. You know, the Russians come in and I see they're very slow, very deliberate. I asked one Russian, because they stand and stare at the icon. And I said, Dmitri, when you look at an icon, how come you stare like that? He says, ah. He said, when you Americans look at an icon, you see an icon. When I look at an icon, I see God. And I thought, oh. And, you know, so I'm standing a lot slower and kind of trying to see Dimitri's God and, you know, to find that, because I think I'm looking at this like an American or an awkward Englishman. And, you know, people come, they don't want to cross themselves when they're new to the church because they say everyone's watching me. I'm afraid they'll see me do it wrong. I mean, I get that, you know, I hear that. And, you know, and I tell them, you know, well, maybe Sunday I'll get you to come up and just practice in front of everybody and help you get over this or something, you know. Bear a little shame. So, yeah. You know, what you don't want to do is everybody wear a cassock and speak with Russian accents. That's not how you acquire your orthodoxy. Yeah. That's kind of fun. I like to do that occasionally, but, well, you know. Very good. Very good. You do a regular Thursday liturgy, or is it a feast tomorrow?
No, regular.
Okay, I was going to say, if it was a feast, how did that pass me by?
No.
Okay.
No, just
daily service. St. Theodora. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Very good. I was thinking Theodora the Studite when you started praying. I said, no, Theodora the Empress, but another good icon.
Well, this is your one chance.
This is it. You can't do this when I'm podcasting.
You're going to have to leave comments in the blog section. I mean, that's a minefield. You're going to avoid that.
Say the wrong thing and 30 people jump on you.
Oh, gosh. I got scolded today by an Australian gentleman who says he goes to church, to Orthodox Church, but he's not a believer. And he was scolding me because he said I was a revisionist. And I'm just thinking, wait a minute, there's something about that didn't compute, being corrected by an unbelieving Australian because he thought I was changing something about Orthodox doctrine. And I was thinking, you don't believe in God, what do you care? I mean, you know, what's the big deal? And he was upset with me because I wouldn't argue with him. So he sent me a note and he said, all of these years, he's not found any clergyman who wasn't interested in a vigorous academic debate. And I said, I just really don't care what you think. I just don't. It doesn't matter to me. I will answer any question you have that's real and existential and actually matters in your life, or maybe something you want to do, but, you know, to be just one more guy that you can argue with. And you've been doing it for years, such that you've actually become an expert in Orthodox theology and attend an Orthodox church because, of course, we're correct. Blogging can really get you some strange people out there. Strange ones.
Think how sad he is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm trying to entice him to have a real conversation. Like, tell me about something, you know, tell me about what you're afraid of. Tell me something real. Yeah. Your question, yeah.
So you speak of not needing to answer. How do you know when to answer and when not?
Yeah.
And
Well, I mean, what I'm certain is I'll always get it wrong.
Oh, wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know that. So, but I was once told, don't answer questions people aren't asking. And if someone is, if someone's asking what seems to be, as best as you can tell, a legitimate question, doesn't mean you may have the answer, may not have the answer. But that's, you can actually have a genuine human encounter on that basis. Because in a way, when someone, if someone has a legitimate question, there is a vulnerability that they're offering. It may just be the vulnerability of ignorance, or it's simply the vulnerability that I don't quite understand you. That's, you can have a question. I mean, you can have a real conversation with that. And it needs to be respected and treated, and kind of see where that comes from, so that you don't step on their grammar too harshly. When I first started the blog back in 07 or so, there was a lot of places on the internet, or a few places on the internet, that were sort of orthodox, but they were dangerous. You could go there and just get obliterated by asking questions. They were like places people set up to police everybody. It was just weird. And it just was, it was strange. And there was like people talk, and I still talk about internet orthodoxy, as in people who spend too much time reading that kind of stuff. As I say, I don't read that stuff. I write it. And I had another blogger a year or so ago, one of my brothers in Ancient Faith, who also blogs for them, who did a kind of a major front page disagreeing with me about something. And behind the scenes, I blew up. And I got rules instituted at Ancient Faith that said, no, I'm not interested in it. In fact, I said that inter-Orthodox debate is the sewer of the internet. Who needs it? People watch one priest taking on another priest? What is that? What is that? You can write me in private. You can even get on the comment section and obey the rules, and we can do it nicely there. But to suddenly launch out and treat it like this, so we've got rules that way, because I have no use for it. It's not going to. It does not serve my ministry or anybody else's. To me, I wanted to create a safe place that people can ask questions, can read, hopefully, and engage theology that and stuff. I mean, I read the other. I'm trained in the other, and I try to digest it and put it into an interesting English form that you can perhaps read it and think, "Well, I never saw it like that." Well, that's good. When that happens and the coin drops, then we've gotten somewhere. But to make it safe, so that you don't get heterodoxy, but you also don't get shamed, you don't get obliterated. And hopefully occasionally get entertained or something, or enlightened. But, I got rules. I started, one of the first things I did on the blog was to write rules, and the rules include being kind and nice to everybody. And if they're not, I forgive their sins with a delete button. I grieve, but I'll delete them, because it's, we've had atheists who are regular, been regular participants in the comments section for as much as a couple of years at a time. But they honestly engage and ask questions. They're more than welcome. Some of them actually just become, one of them nicknamed himself TLO, the Loyal Opposition. He really liked it. He wished we were right. He just didn't think we were. But, he was honest about it. Yeah. So, yeah. Christopher Hitchens would probably get deleted. I don't think he has any questions. He just answers the wrong ones. But, yeah.
Probably not a question for you, but for Father Andreas. When will this recording be available?
Oh.
Do you mind if we post it on our website?
I don't mind a bit.
Done very soon.
On the web? No. God forbid. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah, and, next few days.
The talk I gave in Santa Rosa earlier this week is already up on their site at the parish in Santa Rosa.
St.
Seraphim in Santa Rosa. The one I did, the talks, it was where you got the phone call, but one of the talks I did in Placerville at the Rocord Church there, it'll be up in a few weeks, but it'll be on the Western American Diocese of Rocord.
Mm-hmm.
there. I did a talk last year in San Francisco at the cathedral where St. John the Wonder Worker's relics are. That's on the Western Diocese thing, too. And that's they did a very good job with that one. I was surprised with it. It's a video, actually, so if you're interested in those kinds of things. But I really appreciate your prayers. And those of you who read, I appreciate your reading. And obviously people share it with others, and I appreciate that too, especially if it's useful. If there's things, occasionally I get requests from people, would you write about so-and-so? And one of my rules is only write about what you know. Strangely enough, I just mess up when I try to write about something I don't know. And usually meaning what I know also means I have to care about it, or there's just, or it gets becomes very wooden trying to say something, and I just always, it doesn't play well. So sometimes if you ask for something, you know, it might be that I just think, it's not that I don't think that's a good thing, it's just it's not my thing that I can connect with. And it's okay. It's okay. But I'm glad to take a look at some things too. Or as long as you don't use it as in a passive aggressive manner, as I want you to write about this so my husband will read it. Or my child. I mean, it's sort of, yeah, it's always difficult. Yeah. So.
All right. Anyway. Well, I think we'll wrap this up now. We'll open up the bookstore if you want to buy Father's book. It is back there, and he will sign it for you. And we'll stop there.